So sometimes we labor under the misconception that there's Torah mitzvahs, and then there's Medinas Yisrael. There's like, you know, traditional Judaism, and then somehow we're also pro-Zionist, whatever that means exactly, and we have the misconception that never the twain shall meet. We believe Be'emunah Shleima, that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah well over 3,000 years ago, which speaks to all the realities that Jews encounter throughout the generations, and the categories of halacha can encompass all different situations that we find ourselves throughout the centuries. And as we're going to discover over the next couple of minutes, that's certainly true about the modern reinvigoration and renaissance of Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael, the modern state of Israel. And sometimes when we think about Yom HaTzmaot in particular, and Zionism in general, we have a sort of, I think some of us sometimes labor under a sort of a haziness. It's not really clear, no one really explained, it's sort of good, it's sort of not good, sort of a lot of fuzziness. Sometimes the debates engender more heat than light. So I could spend time now talking to you about the Knesia HaGadol, the Sixth World Congress of Agudas Yisrael, in the late 30s in Marienbad, and how one of the major issues of debate at the time was that the Umos HaOlam were recommending a partition plan where the Jews would get a part of Eretz Yisrael and the Arabs would get a part of Eretz Yisrael. And the major debate at the Aguda Convention was, is it mutter to accept part of Eretz Yisrael as the Jewish state? Or are we mechuyev to insist, are we not allowed to accept anything less than Eretz Yisrael HaShleima as a Jewish state? There was a minority, a very small minority position, who said we can't have a state of Israel kodem bias HaMashiach. But that, at the Aguda Convention, was clearly a small minority. Or I could show you a letter that was put out in Tuf Shin Tes in 1949, at the very big inception of the State of Israel, in advance of the first democratic elections, the democratic vote for the Knesset, a letter that was put out by hundreds of Rabbanim of all stripes and flavors throughout Eretz Yisrael, encouraging Shomrei Torah Mitzvah to vote and to vote for the religious party. A letter which begins by thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the state of Israel, which is Aschalta de Geula, which is the beginning of the process of Bias HaMashiach, and a letter which is signed by a wide array of Rabbanim. Some of the names you might recognize include Rishit Pesach Frank, Ruchatzkel Sarna of Chevron Yeshiva, Ruzalman Sarotskin, and Shlomo Zalman Orbach. We could spend time on the debate over what our perspective is about Hakamas HaMedina and the questions that were raised by some based on Gemara and Ksubas and the responses of many, including the Ohr Sameach, but I'd rather instead, that's a worthy topic of discussion, but I'd rather instead focus on a different question. And that is, what exactly are we celebrating? What exactly is it? Why are we thankful to Kadosh Baruch Hu Yom HaTzmaut? What is it exactly that a deeply thoughtful religious Jew, a Torah Jew, a Ben Torah, seeks to celebrate on Yom HaTzmaut? If we had time, we would discuss the second question as well, and that is the question of how does a Ben Torah celebrate Yom HaTzmaut? It's a worthy question in its own right. We're not going to have time for that now. With at least some of you, I hope to have a chance to discuss next week the ins and outs of full hal, chatzi hal, with a bracha, without a bracha, and so on and so forth, and to share maybe some of Reshechter's perspectives, that those questions are not cheap, shallow, partisan questions of what flavor of Zionism I belong to, but rather, as he points out, the question, for instance, of hal with a bracha, without a bracha, chatzi hal, hal shalem, is actually rooted in machlokus chasim sofer and itziv, how to read a gemara and brachas. Both of whom, Gedolei Yisrael, who passed away long before Hakamas HaMedina. And to recognize that we seek to understand the how through the traditional categories of halacha. But that's for a different time. What I want to focus on right now is the question of why. The question of what is it exactly and why are we celebrating? I have very, very vivid and fond memories of the shiurim that Reshechter Shlita gives every Yom HaTzmaut in Yeshiva. in place of a shir on the Masechta. I have very vivid memories of the first shir that I was zochet to hear in Yom Ha'atzmaut of Tavshin Nun Dalet. And over the course of different years, he'll touch on different themes. And one of the themes he'll come back to from time to time, every couple of years, is to frame it as 10 things that we celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut. We don't have time for 10, but I'd like over the next couple of minutes to share with you several and to begin to appreciate through this Yom Ha'atzmaut in particular, to add much more substance and depth to our appreciation of B'nai Torah, what we'll be celebrating at the end of next week, and to begin to see also what it means to look at modern phenomena through the lenses of the categories of halacha, through the lenses of the categories that Chazal give us. So the most obvious thing that we celebrate, obviously, is Hatzalas Klal Yisrael. That so many Jews were saved, if you have even a scanty familiarity with modern Jewish history, the mid-20th century, you know that after the Holocaust, Jews were incredibly, incredibly vulnerable. There were many Jews who had nowhere to go. You know the story of St. Louis. And so many other stories that the Americans were often not let us onto American shores. The British were not let us onto the shores of Eretz Yisrael. And so countless lives of Jews, both during the 40s and in the decades since, were saved because we have a sovereign Jewish country in Eretz Yisrael. And not only were our lives physically saved, but the explosion, the flowering of Torah that Klal Yisrael has experienced, and specifically the flowering of Torah in Eretz Yisrael that Klal Yisrael has experienced in the decades since Hakamas HaMedina, to see once again the fulfillment of the words of the Navi, Ki Mitzion Teitze Torah, the Moed Na'im, is nothing short of glorious. Now I might say, well, in addition to into so many Jewish lives being saved, in addition to the growth of Talmud Torah, now I might say to you, item number 3 is the restoration of Jewish pride. The restoration of Jewish pride that came with our having sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael for the first time in over 2,000 years. The restoration of Jewish pride that further took flight 19 years later, in 1967, after the Nisim of the Six-Day War and the reclamation of the old city of Yerushalayim. And if I would say it to you, some of you might be thinking, Jewish pride, that sounds like a pretty secular concept. That sounds like 19th century European nationalism. Is that really an authentic Torah concept? So Gemara tells us in Maseches Chagiga that that's a concept that is, if we could use human metaphor, as the Gemara does, profoundly emotional for HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Let's take a look at a Gemara in Chagiga, Hey Amid Beis. Gemara is talking about a mysterious pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu quietly crying. B'mistarim tiv kenafshi. In the private places, so to speak, Rabbi Moshe says, I'm crying inside. I'm crying in private. B'mipnei geva. Why? Because of geva. The Gemara has a lot to say about this pasuk, but let's focus on the Gemara's analysis of the last two words. Why is HaKadosh, what does it mean for God to cry in private, but why is God crying? What's he sad about? Mipnei geva, my mipnei geva, Amar Shmuel bar Yitzchak, the first Amar suggests, Shmuel Yitzchak, mipnei gavasan shal Yisrael, because of the pride of the Jewish people, shenitla mehem venitla la'ovde kochavim. Unless you think that means the part of the Jewish religion, that's the next shita. Hoshua Achmeni says, "Mipnei gavasa shel malchus shamayim." It's the pride of the malchus of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, the divine kingdom, that took a hit with the destruction of Beis Hamikdash. Now, that latter topic, which we could call item number 4, gavasa shel malchus shamayim, the Soloveitchik famously described in a public drasha in Kol Do Di Dofik, to which we will return soon, as the. You know, around 2,000 years ago, with the rise of Christianity, one of the fundamental doctrines of the rise of Christianity was their claim, their false claim, that Jewish people were once Am HaNivchar, but we lost it. We lost the status of the Am HaNivchar. They claim because we didn't accept their Avodah Zarah, we didn't accept Yeshu. As a result, they claim that we lost our status as Am HaNivchar. Their claim further was that's why we lost the Beis HaMikdash, and that's why we lost Eretz Yisrael, because we lost our status as Yama Nivchar, despite countless psukim throughout Tanakh that speak about the permanence and the durability of our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether we do mitzvahs or others. So that was the false Christian claim, that we lost our status as Yama Nivchar. And through, over the course of close to 2,000 years, they would say, look, Exhibit A, totally disconnected from Eretz Yisrael, in Galus downtrodden, clearly the Jewish religion has ended. Hakamas HaMedina pushed back against that argument. Hakamas HaMedina pushed back against that argument, and Hakamas HaMedina presented a serious problem for standard Christian doctrine. So much so that the territory they came up with was, the Jews only have modern Israel. They have Tel Aviv, they have the new city of Yerushalayim, but they don't have biblical Israel. They don't have Beit Lechem, they don't have the old city of Yerushalayim, and so on and so forth. 19 years later, with the Nisim of the Six-Day War, that presented an existential problem for Christian doctrine, which is why, from 67 and on, almost immediately, the Vatican began pushing for internationalization of Yerushalayim. Not for humanitarian reasons, but for doctrinal reasons. Because the fact that Klal Yisrael have clearly returned to Eretz Yisrael presents a fatal kasha to their Avodah Zarah doctrine. And that's Gavasa Shel Malchus Shamayim. The pride of the Jewish religion took an incredible hit with the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. So that's the second sheet in the Gemara Chagiga. The first sheet of the Gemara Chagiga, Gavasa Shel Yisrael, is the pride of the Jewish people. Kadosh Baruch Hu loves his people, and Kadosh Baruch Hu has been crying for millennia since the Churban for the hit that Jewish pride took when we lost our homeland and we were pushed out of Eretz Yisrael. And these are things that we celebrate as they begin to come back. The fact that Jewish people can survive, the fact that Torah has flourished, the fact that with the beginning of our return to Eretz Yisrael and the restoration of Jewish governmental sovereignty of Eretz Yisrael, beginning the restoration of Gavasa Shel Yisrael, of Jewish pride, a beginning of restoration of Gavasa Shel Malchus Shamayim, the pride of the Jewish religion. The Ramban, famously at the end of Bo, coming out of Pesach, talks about the ultimate purpose, the ultimate telos of recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the great overt miracles, the great Nisim Gluyim, like the Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf and so forth. The ultimate goal of that is, by seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Nisim Gluyim, we develop the eyes to notice his Nisim even when they're more subtle. The Rav writes, the Rav spoke in the Drasha Kol Dodi Dofik, which is built around this paragraph in Shir HaShirim, describes the ebb and flow of the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. So much of Shir HaShirim is devoted to the Raya, the girl desperately searching for the boy with whom she's in love, for the Dod. But there's this one passage when she's lost her way, and she's asleep and she's in pajamas, and the Dod comes knocking. And this is what she's been dreaming of, to try to find him. And now he came knocking, Kol Dodi Dofik, the boy whom I love is knocking, and somehow in a moment of laziness, she's like, get out of bed, I'm get my feet dirty, I have to change, get on a robe, blah, blah, blah. And the knocking continues, and then she continues to have this self-talk of laziness, and suddenly the knocking stops. And the moment the knocking stops, she realizes, what a fool I've been. I've been searching him, he's right here. And suddenly she flies out of bed, flies to the door, and the moment has passed. And he's gone, and she runs throughout the city, and he's nowhere to be found. The Rav said in a very famous drasha in the 50s, entitled Kol Dodi Dofik, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is knocking. We better not be that woman in Shir HaShirim who misses the knock. And he identified six knocks. This is even before 67. This is around less than a decade after Hakamas HaMedina. Six knocks. One I mentioned before is the knock at the theological tent, the restoration of Gavasa Shel Malchus Shamayim. Another knock, he said, the incredible improbability of the UN supporting as a unit the formation of the Jewish state, which it did in 1947. one might add the improbability of the UN accomplishing substantive things in general. As the Rav points out, the Gemara has an Agada that sometimes rain falls. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings it to the entire region because of a single person who needs it. It says, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw it to the establishment of UN because of a single need of Klal Yisrael. UN has not been particularly helpful to Klal Yisrael since, but it enabled the formation of the state of Israel, enabled it to be the Haskamas Umas HaOlam, something that no one could even have pictured during thousands of years of Galus. The Rav describes so poetically, says, how could that, the incredible, almost miraculous improbability of the UN supporting Hakamas HaMedina. He said, maybe some of the journalists who were there saw, with their eyes of flesh and blood, saw a flesh and blood human speaker banging his gavel down to end the vote. He said, but those who had spiritual eyes saw Malkol Shel Olam banging down that gavel. They heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu working through that body to create the state. And to one of our fundamental expectations is to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Nisim, especially coming off of Pesach, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chesed, to notice it and to be grateful for it. And let me leave you for now, because time is short, with one final, as I mentioned before, there are many other items that we celebrate, let me leave with one final item. And not only the things that we see B'moei Nayim right now, the restoration of Jewish pride, the ability to have a place to run and for Jews to save themselves and to thrive religiously with the renaissance of Limud HaTorah in Eretz Yisrael, but perhaps there's also, although the Rav suggested this is not necessary to be a Zionist, Rav's definition, I believe, that a Zionist is one who sees the state of Israel as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we might wonder whether there's perhaps more than that. And many of our Rebbeim assume that not only is it a Hatzalah right now and a gift right now, but it's also the beginning of a process. What looks to us very much like the beginning of the unfolding of the process of Bias HaMashiach. Time is short, but I would recommend you take a look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin Tzadiches, which is in front of you. The Gemara describes that there are different, based on Psukim in Yeshayahu and elsewhere, there are different routes, there are different game plans that the unfolding of Bias HaMashiach could take. It could be immediate and entirely miraculous, or it could be a slow, natural process as the Or Chaim in the second side of the Maor Makomos expands upon in his Perish on Balak, and the beginning of the process may be a slow unfolding through natural political means, ultimately coming to the final destination of a flesh and blood Melech HaMashiach, descendant of David and Shlomo, who is king over the Jews in Eretz Israel. Are we there yet at the destination point? Absolutely not. Are we on track? Are we in process? It would seem so. It would seem so. Some wonder, but how could it be that Kadosh Baruch Hu would begin a process of Geula through Jews who were not Maminim, through Jews who were not Shomrei Mitzvah? So Rav Kashi and others point to a passage in Malachim, with the comments of the Radak and the Tam Devei Eliyahu, that some of the greatest Geulos, some of the greatest Yeshuos, some of the greatest reclamations of Eretz Yisrael during the period of Bayis Rishon were HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to bring under leadership of Yeravam ben Yoash, who was certainly, to put it mildly, no great tzaddik. The Tam Devei Eliyahu says, he was over in Avodah Zarah. How come HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought Geula through him? The Tam Devei Eliyahu says, well, he had been careful about not being Makabel Lashon Hara about a particular Navi, about Amos. So apparently how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to do things is his business, but it's certainly nowhere near an impossibility that Kadosh Baruch Hu would begin the process of Geula via Jews who are not as connected to him. And let me close with this. You might say, but where's the evidence that what we're seeing is more than just present Matanos, but the beginning of a process of Geula? Even if there exists such a notion in Chazal, but who says this is it? So the answer is, we're not Nevi'im, we don't know for sure. But the Gemara does say, we'll close with this line, at the top of Tzadiches Samav, the Gemara says, we can't predict when Mashiach will come. To try to do the arithmetic and figure out the magic number, that's very, very dangerous. The Gemara says, but if you're looking for a simon, ain lecha keitz megulim, is there no better indication that Mashiach is on the way than what we have seen over the last century. No better indication Mashiach is on the way, the Gemara said, over 1,600, 1,700 years ago, than a nevuah of Yechezkel, that Eretz Yisrael would once again become green and her trees would once again bear fruit. Atem harei Yisrael anfichem titenu ufichem tisu lami Yisrael. And if you study the history of Eretz Yisrael over the last 2,000 years, you know that countless visitors to Eretz Yisrael were shocked at how arid and desolate it was, how terrible the agriculture was in Eretz Yisrael. From the Crusaders to Mark Twain's travelogue, before and after, Jews and non-Jews are showing up expecting to find Eretz Zavas Chalav Dvash and shocked to find it's anything but. I've often imagined, I wish you could have an aerial video of Eretz Yisrael over the last 2,000 years, a time lapse, and to see how with the Churban Bayis it went, the green disappears and it becomes yellow and gray and brown and largely arid and infertile. And that's the way it was for centuries and centuries and centuries. And then within the course of a couple of decades, Eretz Yisrael was waiting for her children to come back. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided it was time for her children to come back, she began to become green again. When you study early Zionist history, not only is it remarkable, but as the Rambam and Ramban both point out, when you see a remarkable Nes Nister, which was predicted by the Navi in advance, and you see it come true, that takes things to a whole other level. Not only is this a Nevuah, and we have seen so many Nevuahs come to pass, like the Kibbutz Galios, you find reference throughout Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, which for centuries and centuries was something we only dreamt of, and it has happened in remarkable ways over the last number of decades. But to see that Gemara says this is not just a Nevuah, this is the Nevuah, which the Amoraim specified as the best siman that Mashiach is on the way. If we have seen it coming, there is plenty for which to be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for, to be thankful for the nisim and matans we've experienced so far, and to be happily anticipatory and full of tefillah for the future.